Welcome to the Unspoken Truths of Digital Leadership, Living the Leadership Values. Our guests will talk about the unspoken truths of leadership, the values, the dark side and the learnings from dealing with conflict with integrity. Discover how they lead more effectively, how they make decisions, how they live their leadership values, and how they deal with the consequences that happen because of the decisions that they make. I am John O'Poon, I will be your host of the show. Please note that there may be explicit language used during the interview. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hey, welcome to the Unspoken Truths of Digital Leadership, Living the Leadership Values. So with our guest today, I've got Joe McCalville, who is from the United States. So Joe, thank you for coming on the show.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's great to be with you today.
So Joe, let's go into your background story, because I'm sure a lot of people won't know who you are, but would love to know who you are and what you do.
Awesome. I'm a 911 manager in the state of Iowa. It's about in the middle of the United States. I started in 911 in 1998, and I've been in it ever since with a couple year gap. I did leave the 911 profession for a few years. I started off as an emergency dispatcher. I was also a training dispatcher, training new hires. And then I left the agency I started at and became a communications manager for an agency in the southeast portion of the state that I work in. And they had blended their city emergency dispatchers with their county emergency dispatchers into one dispatch center. And I was hired under the age of 30 years old at the time to be the first manager of a countywide consolidation. And those things take a lot of patience and can be very stressful as new policies are written, new seniority lists, everything new that applies to emergency dispatchers. I then left and went to a phone, cable, and internet company. And I'm forever grateful for that job as well, because it improved my technological skills as a leader. And emergency dispatches changing over to next generation 911 or next generation emergency number in your area. And we're starting to use technology more and more. And then I got hired back where I started, and I've been there the last 10 years, and I am the operations manager there. So I also have peer to supervisor experience as well. So when it comes to 911 or emergency dispatch, I like to say inside the profession, I'm still working in it, number one. And number two, I check a lot of the boxes: dispatcher, former training dispatcher, manager at an outside agency, peer to supervisor, manager experience. And then I started training company as well. And I'm sure we'll get into that here in a little bit.
How did you get into choosing to become a dispatcher?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I went to college, and during college, I knew that I did not really like the business classes. So I started off in business and I was learning a lot, but it just wasn't connecting with me. I felt like I was a little bit bored. And so I actually started in communications, and I said to myself, I really like that communications class. So I graduated in communications having no idea what I would get out of it. And I saw the 911 job open up from where I was originally from in the city that I graduated from. And I applied and they hired me. I really, really liked it. And I've stayed with it ever since. And I have tried to grow in that profession and do what I can to get the most out of it. And I really enjoy what I do.
So how'd you deal with the stress and, you know, the tension that comes along with the job? Because we don't get taught during school or in our childhood how to, I guess, manage or regulate our emotions and experience these kind of, you know, high pressured environments, I would say, right?
Yeah. The stress is a big topic in 911, because you're starting to see 911 in the United States has been around since 1968. So 50 years, a little over 50 years. And we're starting to get some data gathered that says we do have the tendency to have some post-traumatic stress disorder. From the emergency calls that we hear, or maybe it's a law enforcement person calling out that they need help, or a firefighter screaming during the middle of a fire, whatever it may be. And so how I deal with stress is trying to learn more about communication in general. I also want to make sure I stick to good habits. I enjoy reading once in a while or exercise. and everything else. But the one thing I would also stress is to reach out and check on your coworkers or the people that you work with. It'll really help when you're going through something. If that is a culture within your emergency dispatch center, if you have other people that will check on you after a major event and you pay it forward and you check on your coworkers after a major event, that goes a long way to help alleviate some of that stress within an emergency dispatch center.
What types of, what's your most, traumatic or one that you remember that stood out for you the most? I'm sure you have like thousands of cases each day, right? So it's like, what's one that's kind of stood out for you and one that you had to, say, kind of challenge you to?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You froze on my end, Jono, so hopefully you're still hearing me and you'll catch up here. But the challenge and the traumatic one that I heard it's definitely a traumatic one where somebody lost their life. And if you could message me and tell me that you're still hearing me because you're froze on my end. But the one call that came in was from a young child. And this is when I first started. And they were in a parking lot. And what happened was the young child didn't know the address of where they were. It was before GPS coordinates of longitude and latitude. And so all I got was a phone number that came with this cell phone call. And I would estimate the child to be around 7, 8 years old. I wasn't sure. So he didn't know the address of where he was, didn't know the building name of where he was. They were in a parking lot. And his cousin, she was rollerblading in the parking lot. And he calls in and he just says to me, my cousin is hurt and she needs help. And throughout the phone call, I did not have an address, did not have a building name or anything. So it was a young child calling. And the only thing I did was I kept asking questions of what was around him. And he could see a baseball field and he could see a brown building. And so I decided to send out our west side fire engine to a high school and our east side fire engine. We have 9 different stations in the city I work in. I just chose 2. And I said, you're responding to a female that was rollerblading and she has some glass stuck in her neck and is bleeding badly. I had obtained that information. And ironically, we did get to the right location. She was in one of the parking lots of the schools that I chose. I felt a little bit guilty of sending the other fire engine to a wrong location, but I think they were happy to go. And that call sticks with me because 911 or emergency dispatch technology has changed to where you now get GPS coordinates on the majority of cell phone calls. There's other products that are now coming out where you're getting even more accurate location on 911 or emergency dispatch phone calls. But the best thing I got out of that incident was the debriefing that we had to go through afterwards. And obviously those are confidential, but I can at least tell you a little bit about the portion that benefited me the most was the fact that one of the fire people said, and he didn't know that I was sitting in the room, but we were together doing a debriefing. And he said that whoever dispatched the call originally, thank you. And that's all I really needed to hear. It helped give me a little bit of closure on that ordeal. And unfortunately, the person, the female rollerblader did pass away from her injuries. But I know that I did everything possible to get her assistance, keep the young child on the caller. And I also now hope that agencies are doing debriefings after major incidents and including their emergency responders in them. And I also try to learn as much about emergency dispatch technology so that we can get as much information as possible and get to the scene quicker rather than later.
Awesome. Wow. That sounds... Sounds terrifying in a way.
Yeah, that one stuck with me for a long time. That call was one of my first couple of years. I don't remember exactly what year, but it was within my first 2 years of starting in the emergency dispatch profession. And it continues to motivate me to make sure I know as much as I do about emergency dispatch technology and to make sure that we're providing the best level of service for our citizens as well as our emergency responders that we dispatch for.
So how do you and your team and your colleagues deal with, I guess, the stress that comes along with it? I mean, do you do training on like healthy habits or things that take your mind off stress or things to take your mind off the experience?
Yeah, there's some stress classes you can go to. We've done them online for a few of our dispatchers that were interested in it. And we also focus on it a lot during what we do at our agency, at least, is we do our own in-service training days. And so we aim for twice a year, once in the spring, once in the fall. Sometimes it's only once a year based on how busy we are, staffing levels or the overtime budget, whatever. But we have a lot of experts that are around us or that work at our own agency. And a lot of times we bring them in. So we have a critical incident team, or we have a peer support team, or we have mental health liaisons, and we bring them into our biannual training and have them speak to emergency dispatchers to make sure they're aware of what we offer at our own agency. And then we also focus on some of the classes that are offered either online by the national organizations, or we put out training opportunities for them to attend when we're able to send them as well.
And do you have like therapy sessions and things like that kind of set up as well? Like the ones where you talk about what's really going on inside your thoughts and feelings and, you know, I guess emotions.
Yeah, we do have that ability through our peer support team at our agency. They have a few people you can reach out to, whether it be a chaplain or a professional, and we would just contact our peer support team, and that's all confidential, and they help you get that set up so you can speak with somebody that's a professional as well.
Amazing. Have you had any, I guess, cases where what helped you choose to be in leadership in line with, you know, why did you decide to step up into that position? Because for many people, you know, they'd be afraid to step up or into a manager position or a leadership position due to responsibility and that comes along with it, right?
Yeah. My story's kind of funny a little bit in the fact that I really just wanted to be a supervisor of the dispatch floor because I really love the profession of emergency dispatching. And so when my boss left, when I was at my first agency that I started at, I put in for his position. I didn't think I was going to get it. I barely met the minimum qualifications at the time, but I wanted an interview because I did meet the minimum qualifications. But unfortunately, there were more qualified people that applied. They only interviewed so many, and I got a flush letter without even the opportunity to interview for the position. So then I saw the opportunity in Southeast Iowa of the state. And I thought again, when I went down there, I actually made the interview list because I met the minimum qualifications and I got the job. And I wasn't even sure when I interviewed that, because all I wanted at the time was to be a supervisor of our dispatch center and to have interview experience for a position of leadership. And then I decided, well, this is one way to get experience. And I went for it and did it, and I haven't looked back, and I continued to grow in leadership, including taking other training classes outside of emergency dispatch to make me a better leader as well.
What made you choose leadership? Have you had what was your first, I guess, encounter with leadership during your childhood or any experiences that you had throughout your life that made you think, I would love to use leadership or become a better leader or... Mm-hmm. What made that choice?
Yeah, I think the leader that I've always looked up to by reading a book, one of them is John Wooden. And he's a former basketball coach at UCLA. And he's passed away. But his leadership skills, and he calls it the pyramid of success. And I read some Wooden books about how these philosophies when I was in college really took hold. And then after college... when I was hired in 911 by the agency I'm currently working at and I started at, we had a leader that was just phenomenal. He really took good care of his people. He believed in touching their hearts before he asked for their hands. And he really set the stage for how to develop other people and how to lead other people and me and take a stressful situation, but yet be successful at it. And then along the way, some of my coworkers, my first training dispatcher, she was a phenomenal leader. And she taught me the ins and outs of dispatching. And then the person that I worked with 9 out of every 10 days, every 2 weeks, he was a retired law enforcement officer from the 1970s. And he came back to emergency dispatching. And he taught me a lot about dispatching and not having attitude on the radio and what it means to emergency responders and everything else. But the person that started leadership and wanting to learn about leadership for me is probably John Wooden. And then learning from there and going through the 911 emergency career for me and having a great person that hired me, a great person that taught me, and a great person to reinforce some of those skills. I think I've been very lucky along the way.
You create your own luck. Awesome. How would you, I guess, for me, I want to find out more about as well. What do you think makes a good leader or helps you become a better leader? How would you apply, I guess, leadership styles and principles into your own life? And how's that been for you?
I think the number one thing that any leader should know is that the hardest person to lead is always going to be yourself. Period. And once you figure that out, if you start looking at yourself before you look at anybody else, that'll help you make better decisions. And the second thing that I would say is the same thing I've already said previously. Make sure you start to build relationships with your people. If you skip that step, building relationships with your people, you will constantly have to keep circling back to that point to in order to get your people on the same page. And I can speak from experience, because when I came back to the agency I'm currently working at, I worked with the majority of the people previously. They were still there. I had left for a few years, but I came back and the majority of the people were still there. And I thought, I already know these people. I know what they need and what they want. And for a few years, I skipped that step of stepping back and saying, I was a peer then. Now I'm a leader of this organization. I need to find out how they want to be led. I knew how to work with them as a coworker, but I didn't know what made them tick as a leader. I didn't know what their career aspirations were. And I forgot to build relationships with my people as a leader when I went back. And I think you oftentimes hear the peer to supervisor transition is so very hard. And when I look at that, a lot of times from my own experience, I would say it's because the people going from peer to supervisor skip the step of building relationships with their people and starting over and saying, how is it that you want to be led? What is it that you want from this agency? Instead of assuming they already know because they used to work with them. And so I would say the hardest person to lead is always yourself. Continue to always develop yourself so you can add value to other people. And make sure you're building relationships with the people you're leading, because it makes going through tough times, hard times, change, and everything else significantly easier.
Wow, that's powerful. I love the fact that you said, you know, the hardest person you have to lead is yourself, because that's the, I think, the struggle for most people is waking up and leading, you know, their own lives every day. That's incredible. Awesome.
Yeah.
Let's go into, has there been times where a supervisor or someone in your life that's made decisions that kind of conflicted with your personal values and integrity? Like decisions that you didn't agree with, and how did you go with those?
One of them was in a public meeting. And so since it made the newspaper, I'm free to talk about it, I guess. We had the second person in command at the sheriff's office of the consolidated agency that I had been hired to manage. And for whatever reason, some of the changes we were going through during that time, he wasn't very happy with at the time. And so he had tried to, you know, work with me a little bit, and I was trying to explain to him, well, he wasn't seeing the results that he wanted. And so he went to a public meeting, which anybody's free to do, and they take comments and correspondence from members and other visitors towards the end of the meeting on the agenda of this meeting anyhow. And he decided to state his displeasure in a public meeting. And those minutes have to be typed up and put into a newspaper. And I had no problem really with him doing that, except for when the board turned to me and said, Joe, what do you have to say about that? I decided to give my answer, and he kind of cut me off, and I had let him completely state his displeasure with my agency for, you know, I think he went on for about 5 to 6 minutes, maybe longer, and I didn't interrupt him once. And so I just asked him to, you know, please stop interrupting me as I answer to the board. And it just got a little bit more contentious than what I was hoping for. So again, when I look back at it originally, when I was in the heat of the moment, I said that he shouldn't have done that. He shouldn't have done that. And now as I look back at it, you know, a few years later, I also say that I still could have handled it a little bit better, asked more questions of him instead of instantly responding and saying, you know, what would you like to see moving forward? Had I just asked that question, instead of so wholeheartedly trying to defend myself and my agency, I think the conversation would have been handled better. So that was a personal growth moment for me. And I think I do better at that most of the time. I still do disagree with how he handled it. I wish he would have came to me and we could have worked it out as we needed to. But that was also his right to go to that meeting and say what he needed to do. The best news out of all, even though I disagree with how he handled it, the best news for me was it really taught me a moment of professional and personal growth. And so when you disagree or things come up that you're going to have to work through with somebody else or maybe questions your own integrity, rather than getting defensive, try to learn or listen, educate yourself on the other side of the fence or whatever, so that you can continue to grow and possibly change or meet somebody in the middle or educate them on why you feel the way that you do. So it really makes you better at discussions and handling things the right way. And I disagree on how he handled it, but it was a great moment for me to develop personally and professionally. So I'm also grateful for that.
But it's also the, I guess in communication it's also having that different perspective,
mm-hmm.
and also, like you said, listening.
Yeah.
And what else, you know, what else they could do better in terms mm-hmm. of communication is, you know, they could have approached you first instead of going to a public meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's having the tough conversations.
Yes.
I think some people like to do, or think is it easier to do the easy way out is just complain or, you know, mass
mm-hmm.
disrupt the solution or just the conversation that you had.
Yeah, absolutely.
How would you go about handling conflicts? Is there any other, you know, I guess you have many challenges and conflicts in your profession.
Yeah.
Ones that you most learning as well?
Yeah, again, listening is you're going to be your number one asset when dealing with conflicts, talking to people one-on-one, getting the whole story. There's typically two sides to every story. And a lot of times it could be perception and how somebody saw what they saw or how somebody heard what they heard, and making sure that you're giving an opportunity to everybody in that conflict to share what happened and everything else, and really talking to them and then setting the expectation with them and saying, no, this is the way that's the way our policy reads. This is how we're going to do it. So I think with difficult conversations, the first step is to make sure everybody's heard. And the second thing is to communicate with everybody freely. Third thing is to set expectations. And the fourth thing is to make sure you're following up. So I think it's a little bit of everything, but if you don't start off right and make sure that everybody has an opportunity to be heard, and you jump to conclusions, the other three things won't fall in line. So when dealing with conflict, you have to make sure you get the whole story. Otherwise, the rest of the process is just going to fall apart.
Wow. Is this a process that you came up with previously? Or?
It's just one that I mentally use. And because of messing up along the way, I only get one side of the story. And it's kind of failing forward and learning from my own mistakes. So it's one that I just make sure that I use and to make sure I'm listening. And one of the employee reviews I had along the way, one of the questions we have to ask of our emergency dispatchers is, what's one thing I can do to improve my leadership? And the first few times I had to ask that when our organization made us ask, I was a little bit nervous. But the good news was I could tell when I had developed the relationships with the people because I would get honest answers to that question. And one of the best answers I ever received was, you need to be a better listener. And I talk about this all the time in the classes that I teach all over. And I'm just so proud that she had the courage to tell me that, because I do a much better job at it. And now during employee reviews, I shut everything off, except for if I have to refer to a graph or refer to a recording or something like that, I might have that on. But the instant I refer to that, I turn it off after we're done. They have my undivided attention during the employee review. If somebody comes in to talk to me and I'm kind of distracted by working on something else, I minimize it or lock my computer so I can't see that while I'm having the discussion with them. And I've had to really, really work on my listening skills. And that's been like 5-6 years since that employee review happened. And I still work on it to this day, every day.
Well, it's one of the most crucial skills, I would say, in leadership and in communications is listening. There's so much more when you listen than than you can see, especially when you give them the undivided attention. There is so much more you can read about them, the emotions they're going through, their body language, and everything that goes on. It's like you listen more than you actually, you know, it's not just the words they're saying, it's everything throughout, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
So how would you say you made effective leadership decisions?
How do I manage leadership positions?
How do you manage, decisions, leadership decisions that you make? Like, would you say it's the right one or is it the wrong one? Because, you know, in your profession, it's so rapid. It changes seconds, right?
Yeah.
Every second counts in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to, again, it goes back to listening, making sure when you're taking that emergency dispatch call, you're listening to what they're saying. Also relying on your technology. The emergency dispatch profession has really changed, and we get a lot more information in most agencies with that 911 call. But how do I manage my own decisions? You know, I have to make them very quickly. And the way to make decisions quickly is to grow every single day. So you grow slowly by doing it every single day and continue to professionally develop so that when you have to make that quick decision, you can do it quickly. So I rely on my training, my commitment to continual improvement to reach my maximum potential, and to make sure that I'm educating and re-educating our staff on our policies and procedures. And then you're able to then make the best decision quickly. And then when you don't make the best decision, and you have to learn and grow from that to make sure that you're willing to say, I could have done better. And like I said at the beginning, one of the hardest people to lead, or the hardest person, is always yourself. So if you are willing to say to somebody else, will you review how I handled this or give me honest feedback, you have to be willing to accept it so that you can grow. So when I manage my decision making, I try to make sure I'm learning about leadership, learning about making decisions, making sure I understand our policies and procedures of our organization and staying in tune with that, but also staying in tune with the people that have to implement and perform those policies and procedures, because we could write it, but maybe it's not the most effective. Then we have to go back and make sure that we rewrite it to make sure we do what we say. And to be willing to listen, hold yourself accountable, learn, grow, and communicate with the people that you work with. And I think you'll be able to much better manage your decisions in the heat of the moment, as long as you stay in tune with what your profession is.
Because I've seen on YouTube and stuff like that, about dispatch calls. And these are ones that you don't really hear in the news.
Yeah.
Like when someone, there was one incident where I saw where it was a domestic abuse or something, but she managed to get a phone, or she was, you know, constrained by someone, and she managed to get on the mobile phone and called the dispatcher.
Mm-hmm.
And the dispatcher was very calm, was saying, stay on the phone, I've dispatched two or three squad cars on their way, they'll be in there in 2 or 3 minutes, can you just hold on for 2 to 3 minutes? And yep. Then she was in the bathroom or something, and she was like, I'm in the bathroom, he's outside, I don't know whether he's asleep or whether he's, you know, what he's doing, but I'm in the bathroom, I'm locked in the bathroom right now.
Yeah.
And I think the squad obviously goes into by the window or something and kind of flash them lights or something. Like, how would you kind of make decisions based on those kind of incidents? Mm-hmm. Like, how many squad cars to send out? Do you need the ambulance? Do you need interpreters and all sorts?
Yeah, absolutely. And that comes from the instant you answer the phone call. The majority of the time you're going to try to answer the phone call. And the first thing to send help that you're always going to need is the same, no matter what type of call it is going to be the address or the location of where the people need help. So that's the first and most important thing you can find out on every phone call, in my opinion, is where are we going to send help? Okay. And then the second thing is, you know, finding out exactly what happened that led to that call. And then based on what they tell you, the example you gave is a domestic, okay? An important thing is the phone number they're calling from in case you lose contact. But that also tells you a lot more, because if you have any past history with that phone number, say that you are unable to get the address, but maybe they're able to confirm the phone number and the phone call gets disconnected. If you do a search of previous calls on that phone number, maybe you'll have their address in your system. So that's going to be an important thing. And then you're going to find out how many people are involved, what's their names, what's the caller's names, a description of the people. And the reason you want that description is maybe they're inside when the call starts, but during that 2 to 3 minutes in the example that you gave of the squad cars responding, maybe the person or the suspect went outside. And so the law enforcement people need to make sure they know what they're getting into and who they're looking for, who the possible violent person is or why they're having the domestic. And then you're going to try to find out if any weapons are involved, if anybody's been assaulted, and then if somebody has been assaulted on that domestic, do they need an ambulance? So you're just going to ask, do you need an ambulance? And then the next thing that you're going to do is try to always use the word safe, safety, or safely. So in your example, they were hiding in the bathroom. I would have asked, are you safe in the bathroom? If they say yes, I know I can then keep them on. And then are you safe to continue to talk to me? You know, if she has to set the phone down, set the phone down, but keep an open line so I can still hear what's going on. If she can't talk, maybe she can tap on the phone. You know, are there weapons involved? If you can't talk, tap on the phone once for yes, don't tap the phone for no. And then if they tap the phone, you can continue to ask questions. So there's tapping on the phone, there's keeping an open line. Some agencies at least now have a text to 911. So maybe if, before they hang up, they say, if you have to hang up, maybe you could text me. So you're no longer on the phone and text your emergency number, but you'd need to know if that's available in your jurisdiction. And then having that history with the phone number. So based on the question, tell me exactly what happened or what's going on there, however you ask it, is going to determine what questions you ask from the caller. And a lot of times the caller is in a stressful situation and they'll sometimes just say, just send help. Stop with all your questions. Just get somebody here. Just send help. And the reason we're asking those questions is to protect the caller, protect the responders, protect the suspects, and to make sure we're sending enough help and as well as the right help. So if they've been assaulted and need medical attention, we're going to send an ambulance. And then the question that you asked about how many squad cars go. A lot of times that's determined by agency policy, but a general rule of thumb that I like to use is if it's a cold report call where there are no suspects or they have suspect information, but the suspect is not there right now, such as somebody stole my bicycle outside of my front lawn. Okay. Is the suspect there now? No. Do you know who did this? No. Okay. Then maybe send, and sometimes they'll take those reports over the phone. Sometimes they won't. But if you have to send a law enforcement officer to those types of calls, you're probably going to send one officer because there is no suspect. There's only one person you're going to be speaking with. But on the domestic situation that you mentioned, you're probably going to send a minimum of two officers to make sure that if the person is violent or is combative, that you have enough resources to detain the person and get them under control.
Wow. This is so much that goes on in your profession. It's incredible. But it doesn't get reported on the news and media. That's the... So how would, I guess, for you, how did you manage your internal thoughts and discussions that you have with yourself? Like, if there's instances where you felt like you did badly or you feel like you could have done better, you know, when you kind of... We all have those moments when we kind of beat ourselves up, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How would you overcome and deal with those kind of situations?
Yeah. Again, I would go back to being willing to admit to myself that call could have been handled better, and then I ask myself how. It's one thing to admit that it could have been handled better, but to answer the question how it could have been handled better will actually allow you to fail forward. And the more times you fail forward, the more you're going to learn, the more you're going to develop. And you fail forward by reaching out to other people and saying, how did you handle that? How come your call was successful and my call maybe wasn't? And learning techniques and tricks to use to get information out of hysterical callers, such as repetitive persistence, which is asking a question in a slow, controlled voice over and over until a hysterical caller that's just screaming into the phone actually hears the question and gives you the answer. And sometimes you may say it 7-8 times, but you finally got the answer to your question to send them help. And learning those techniques to make you more effective at your job. But when those calls get you down, like where the outcome was just out of your control and everything else, making sure that you're reaching out, not keeping it bottled up, talking to somebody, sharing your experiences with other people in the agency that you work with, and really building that teamwork. But when I handled one where I felt it could have went better, the first thing I wanted to do is make sure that I grew from that experience and I didn't repeat it again. Because if you keep repeating the same mistake, that's when it really is going to become stressful.
And I know you mentioned, you touched upon that when you said the positive habits such as reading. Was there anything else that you kind of do?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I wanted to learn about was leadership, communication, adding value to other people. And so for 2 years, I researched companies of where I could maybe go get a certification that allowed me to take this information and share it with other emergency dispatchers. I started my own teaching and training company called 911 Gold Line Training. Dispatch is known as the Thin Gold Line. I believe that's universal. And for 2 years, I researched organizations, read a few books, and the person that really spoke to me was John Maxwell. And he's viewed by many as the number one person in the world on leadership and personal development. And he has a John Maxwell team, and you go and get this certification, and it allows you to take by the user rights that you have some of the information that he has, or almost all of it, and share it in your classes. And then what I do is I provide some of the best leadership, communication, personal development type information, and I share relevant 911 stories of what's happened to me in my emergency dispatch career to relate this information to emergency dispatchers around the world. And when I had this idea and concept, I said, I don't know if it'll catch on. It's a different way of training compared to the training providers that I'm used to, but I think it's needed. And I decided to let the people that are teaching really intense topics, such as maybe mass casualty incidents or wildland fires or ocean or river rescues or active shooter events, let the experts that are teaching that teach those classes. And I'm going to try to become an expert on personal development and leadership and communication because it's so needed in the emergency dispatch profession. And I went and got certified by John Maxwell in 2017. And in 2017, the fall of 2017, I did a class in my own state of Iowa, and the class reviews were impactful enough that other agencies throughout my home state booked my whole 2018 calendar for the vacation days where I was willing to train other dispatchers, because I do that on my vacation days because I still work in the profession. And I've been busy ever since, until the coronavirus, which kind of stopped in-person training classes. And it's actually been working. And now to develop more content and more classes and to make sure I'm reaching as many people as possible. And I'm going to be launching 911 Leadership Gold. And there's a website that's going to be updated. It's 911leadershipgold.com. where I'm taking some of the information of leading through a crisis, leadership gold concepts, and other things that come with that class, and trying to reach emergency leaders, not only in the United States, but all over the world, and paying it forward with my international teaching certification that I have. So a big part of me is my company, wanting to add as much value as I possibly can to emergency dispatchers around the world, and to continue to pay it forward.
That's absolutely incredible. How did you decide to, why did you decide to do that?
Yeah, I decided to do it because I felt there was a need for it in emergency dispatching. When I read the articles on emergency dispatching, it may not be everywhere, but a common theme, so at least in the majority, was high stress, high turnover, low retention, low opportunities for career growth. A lot of times in most agencies, and I wanted to become a better leader to make sure that I was doing everything possible to develop people in the emergency dispatch profession so that they were getting as much out of their career as possible, and to remain motivated so that I stayed on top of dealing with the stress that comes with not only being a 911 dispatcher, but running a 911 center. And I just wanted to make sure I was the most effective I could be in my position. And then the overall goal of why I did it is I want to make a difference with as many people as possible. I think sometimes my heart is so huge, and I want to meet as many people as possible that do this, because they obviously want to help people. I want to do that as well. And so I decided to give it a try. And the good news for me is it's working, and I have high energy. It also helps me control my energy a little bit to keep myself very occupied throughout the day. And so that's been a huge help as well. So I did it for a lot of reasons. One, to add value to myself so that I'm able to add value to as many people as possible. And I didn't want to set a small goal of just my own state. I didn't want to set even a small goal of just the United States. I set a goal of I wanted to touch people all around the world, and slowly but surely that's starting to happen.
That's incredible. I want to go a bit more deeper into your why. Is why else would you do it? Because yeah, it's, you could, there's so many other things you could be doing, right? But why this mission?
Yeah, this mission is because, you know, when I teach a class, okay, and I go into the class and I try to use energy, humor, seriousness, teaching topics. And I've got this little formula. And when I go through my class rehearsal, I want to make sure they're getting something out of it. And what's been really impactful is to see when somebody goes through one of my classes, the laughter of the stories that relate to them. And it's not like making fun of an incident that we handle or anything like that. It's talking about like the heating and cooling of the agencies we work at. And sometimes the system is programmed to save money and gets turned off in the middle of the night, and dispatchers are freezing in their centers, and just relating to them on things like that. And to make sure, but my why is I truly want to make a difference. I want to make a difference with the people that want to help other people. And so the real why is, cancer has battled my family huge, and this is really getting into it now. And when I was working in the southeast corner of our state as the manager of the Consolidated Center, there was a time, and I was only there for 3 years, where it was upwards of, I've lost count, is between 5 and 7 people in my immediate family that were all of a sudden battling cancer at the same time. And we've lost people as I mean, we've lost people in their 70s. We've lost people as young as 23 years old. Our cousin that had just graduated. And when he called me, because he liked talking to me, and him and I were fairly close. I didn't see him a lot, but I saw him enough and stayed in touch with him during, especially football is a big sport here. And during college football, we would stay in touch and everything else. But he called me and he told me that he had came down with cancer and everything else. And and I talked to him, and I just promised him as well that he would be in some of my classes. His message would continue to spread. And we did a walk for him. It was a 5K race, run, walk before he passed away and everything else. And he passed away way too young as a really good person. And I want to make sure I'm constantly making my family proud, myself proud, and paying it forward to as many people as possible. Because not only are we dealing with the stress of the job, but a lot of times we're dealing with personal stress as well. And when those things start to add up, if you're not doing something to make the world a better place, that's what really motivates me. So my why is to continue to make myself proud, my family proud, and hopefully others proud as well that are just meeting me for the first time.
I'm damn proud, Joe. It's incredible what you're doing and the extent you're going for, because I've had, you know, people in my family go through cancer as well, and it is challenging.
It is
it's amazing. But, you know, what takes to trigger us, right? You know, Tony Robbins talks about for people to change is, you know, is either pain or pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time it's pain, yeah. Unfortunately. But that's just incredible what you're doing with your company and your training, Joe. I'm really looking forward to hear your company go global and international and cross in the UK.
Yeah.
Definitely needing, you know, what you have to offer. There's so much going on right now, and trauma and mental health is such a big issue,
mm-hmm.
especially in you know, emergency services.
Yes.
But it's unreported. These are the things that no one talks about. It's really, we need to start pushing that message out there.
Yeah.
Which is why I have you on the show as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you, man. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to tell my story and just have this discussion. And I would love to, you know, reach the world. And like I said, the website is 911leadershipgold.com. It's going to be for leaders in emergency services all around the world. And I hope to launch the full program probably this fall. I was hoping to do it this summer, but I got slowed down a little bit by the pandemic that's the world is facing. And so that slowed me down a little bit. So realistically, probably this fall sometime.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. Is there anything else that you would, you advise people, I guess, in the Unspoken Truths of Leadership, what else would you advise them?
To get involved. Get involved. The only way you're going to make a difference is to try to make a difference. And what I mean, when I got involved, did I ever think I'd be speaking with you today, you know, across the pond or anything else? No, I didn't know. And I would probably just end with thank you. Thank you to you for having given me the opportunity to come on and tell my story to you. The questions you've asked is, I've had goosebumps throughout this. And I'm just knowing there's an opportunity to reach emergency dispatchers across the pond again. It brings me tremendous pride in what I'm doing, and it wouldn't be possible without you. So to make sure people go to the Unspoken Truths of Digital Leadership, check it out, make sure they're listening to it, because it's the potential to really make a difference in somebody's life, and thank you.
Thank you so much, Joe. I'm very inspired to keep doing what I do now. It's meeting people like yourselves that inspire me to keep stepping up. And keep showing up and keep, you know, striving to make a difference, like you say. Because I feel like we're only on this planet for, you know, a short period of time. And anything can happen. So why waste it not doing anything? And like you said, get involved and just try it and see what happens, you know.
Yeah.
The worst that we can do is fail forward. And, you know, if it's not a risk of dying, you know, you make a mistake and you just carry on. You just keep doing it.
Absolutely. Again, thank you, man. It's been great.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Unspoken Truths of Digital Leadership. I hope you found this interview insightful and useful. Please remember to subscribe and review the podcast. And if you have found it useful, please feel free to send it and share it to your network, as I will be very appreciative that it will spread and help out more people in the world. If you would like more information or the show notes and resources that I will be providing you, then please go to www.johnopoon.com, go to the blog and find the podcast section. Step up, show up and stay up. Take care.